This episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by Ford Motor Company. Built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress, from connectivity to autonomy, AI to machine learning, Ford has one simple goal: to improve mobility for its customers. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Nicholas Saravia, the Transportation Senior Analyst at Inside.com. We've got a great interview today. I'm joined by Peter Ternström, founder and president of Jetson, a Swedish company with a mission to change the way we travel. They aim to make the skies available for everyone in a safe personal electric aerial vehicle. But before we jump into things with Peter, I wanted to let you know a little more about Inside. Our mission at Inside.com is to help entrepreneurs and executives level up their knowledge and careers. We do this through providing news, networking, our community, and events. We offer 14 newsletters, primarily covering the worlds of business, tech, venture capital, crypto, and of course, transportation. We also host free events every month where attendees like you can hear from those that are building the worlds of tomorrow and discover exclusive insights and trends from industry experts. Now let's jump into things with Peter. Peter, hello, how are you?
Hi, I'm doing good. Thank you. My internet just went down in my winter house in Italy, and the internet is not very good. So I had to switch from the cable modem to the to the phone. The phone actually works better. That's interesting.
No worries. Let's jump into it. So tell us a little bit about your background before starting Jetson. So
before I started Jetson, I had multiple ventures. I did my first company with a proper exit when I was just 24 years old. I was one of the inventors of e-learning in Sweden. That was my first company. The second one was that we did mass emails, something like a Swedish version of MailChimp, something like that. That went also very well. And I sold that in 2007, I think. Then I did one thing I regret. I started working with internet voting and internet democracy. I thought that was going to be the next big thing. Like, you know, why do we need politicians and stuff like that? You know, that I wasted a lot of time doing that because, of course, no politician in the world wants to see him replaced by some computer system. I didn't understand that. Very idealistic. Now, I have a travel agency based in Switzerland. We do super high level events for the richest people in the world, the top 1%. The last event we are organizing, the next one is we rented the entire Louvre in Paris. Yes, so we are inviting 40 people to come see the Mona Lisa without any queues. But anyway, moving on to Jetson, that's a company the idea has been with me my entire life. I've always been looking up in the sky, looking at airplanes and helicopters. I did my PPL, my private pilot's license, like about 20 years ago. I spent a lot of time either in the air or thinking about being in the air flying. But ever since I was this child, I've always been extremely interested in finding a way to build a flying car. And the technology, the main obstacle has always been technology. You know, it's difficult. That 20 years ago, we did not have the technology to make this such a thing. You know, but starting from about 10 years ago, we could build camera drones. It was called. So you had a big drone, was 1.3 meters big, and you put an expensive camera underneath, and you can shoot amazing shots with it. It was a revolution in Hollywood. And from that technology, if you build on it, if you buy better batteries, and these batteries that we're using, they become available in 2015. Suddenly, we have batteries with enough energy density, so it makes it feasible to build a big drone-like thing, eVTOL, which actually can have a human pilot. The project started in 2017. In 2018, at the end of 2018, we had the first prototype. And after that, we did a couple of iterations, of course, but it was much more difficult than we thought. You cannot just think that the Jetson 1 is a large drone of some kind, okay? The technology is completely different and has to do with many other factors. Like, for instance, if a DJI drone falls around from the sky, no one's going to care. It's going to cost you a couple of hundred bucks, you know, but no one's going to die. But if this thing falls down from the sky, you're in trouble. Okay. So you need to be able to make something that is really safe.
With the eVTOL space being so early, how are you able to fund the company? Did you talk to angel investors or VCs? And if so, what kind of feedback did you get?
Well, we haven't. I funded it on my own. So we didn't have to fund. We didn't talk to any investors, you know, at all, actually. We just did it on our own. I mean, I have a couple of companies since before that I've done exits with. So I don't really need to, you know, go to talk to angel investors immediately. I am one of these on my own. One important thing there to, if you look at the market with eVTOLs, is there something wrong with my picture? Because this guy kind of looks frozen. Okay. One thing that you have to understand with the eVTOL market right now, as it is in this extremely early stage, is that last time I checked, which was 3 weeks ago, we have 177 companies that are starting in this field. They're either building air taxis, or they're building some pizza delivery thing, or some of them are building some recreational vehicles, just like the Jetson. There's 177 of them. 170 does not have a product. They have a PowerPoint presentation, maybe a drawing in SolidWorks, so they have a rendering, but they have an angel investor behind them with $1 million, okay? So that's 170 of that. Then we have seven, of which Jetson is one, and in there you have big players like Airbus, Boeing. There is this Swedish hero called Niklas Sandström. He made a software called Skype. Very famous Swedish investor. He's invested heavily in Lilium. The difference between Lilium, Airbus, and Boeing and Jetson is that the scope of the mission, because the scope of the mission with Airbus and the Lilium project with Niklas Sandström is that they want to solve the big problems in the world. Those big problems are urban air mobility, and also you have air taxis, autonomous flights, flying between skyscrapers in Manhattan, all those things that are part of the future, futuristic vision of personal transport in an urban environment. Big task ahead, and it's not going to be solved by any of them. It's going to be solved by things like legislation, automatic air traffic control, those kind of inventions that are not even on the table yet. The reason why we can have a Jetson now, already in 2021, whereas we're going to wait another decade for the Airbus thing, is that we are removing all that and saying, listen, let's just have fun. Flying is amazing. And now with this invention, this beautiful thing that we have bought, we can let anyone get a taste of flight. And it is so much fun to fly the jets. I'm not sure if you have seen the movie that we shot a movie in a desert, a sort of Krakow, which is a military training ground. It looks like a desert, but it's actually in Poland, which is strange, but it is. It is a profoundly fun experience, and it's also very intuitive to fly the Jetson. In the left hand, you have the thrust lever. On the right hand, you have a joystick. So the thrust lever moves you in the Z axis up and down, and the joystick moves you in the X and Y axis, front, back, left, right. And also you have a third axis where you twist the joystick to move the yaw. So you kind of move the nose where which direction you want. And it takes literally 2 or 3 minutes, and you're up to speed. It is easier to drive than a car with a clutch and a manual gearbox. Easier, much easier. Mm-hmm. Yes, and the people I've tried it a couple of times, and you just don't want to stop because it's just so amazing. I have to ask you: have you ever had a dream where you were flying and you woke up and you were disappointed that you couldn't fly in
all the
morning?
Time. Yeah.
Yes, I did all the time. There are people. This is a very common dream that they can fly, or another dream is that they can jump very far. This is very, very common. These two dreams. And with the Jetson, you can do this for real. You don't have to feel disappointed. You can take out your Jetson and you can fly it, and you can experience that fun. But also understand that what we have created is a jet ski, a water scooter, you know, but for the sky. We are not promising you that you can use this to drive to fly to work. You can't fly over densely populated areas. Sorry, not yet. You can't fly between skyscrapers in São Paulo or Manhattan or Warsaw. Sorry. It needs special certification for that, special legislation. The legislation is not here. It's going to be here in 5 to 10 years. So it's a toy. It's a really, really, really fun toy.
On that, so for your customers to be able to fly on a Jetson 1, they do not require any permitting. They would have to like fly in private property. Is that correct?
It depends where you are in the world. Now, this now the thing is like this: in the United States exists something called the FAA, and they have a rule called Part 103. Rule Part 103 in the United States states that if the flying vehicle weighs less than 120 kilos, 250 pounds roughly, if it does not fly faster than 55 nautical knots, which is exactly 100 kilometers an hour, and if you fly it in something called Class G airspace, which is far away from airports and far away from densely populated areas, then this vehicle you can fly without a license during the day. Yes, so there already exists a legal framework in the United States to do this. Now, it doesn't exist outside of the United States, but I expect that all the other civil air authorities, you know, I mean, Canada is already discussing it. I've called Swedish the civil air authority, and they're also considering just to implement this one. The Jetson weighs just 86 kilos, so it's much less than 120. So it's actually made to fit within the Part 103 and the FAA in the United States. And that's also why I think 70% of our customers are from the United States.
And you said it doesn't require much training to be able to fly on a Jetson 1. What can you talk a little bit more about that? What would it require from a customer to be able to know how to fly a Jetson 1?
Well, before they get their Jetson 1, they have to attend a training, which we do in Sweden or Italy. Depends. I mean, I haven't decided yet where this is going to be. It's going to be at the Jetson factory. At the Jetson factory, he gets to learn three things. He gets to learn one, really, really rudimentary basics in what is Class G airspace? You know, where can I fly this legally? Where can I fly it without making a mess? Important for us, okay? So we teach him that, the future pilot that. You have many of the clients that have bought, they already have PPL, private pilot's license, so they already know this. But let's just refresh it a little bit. We will also look at maps where they live, and we can find spot areas where it's suitable for the Jetson to fly in. The next thing is that this is an experimental home-built aircraft. So in order to fit under Part 103, the end user needs to do a part of the construction himself. So that's another thing that we're going to show them at the factory, what part fits where, what cable goes where, and those things. And number three is that we teach them to fly. The first times they will fly on a Jetson will be under our supervision near the factory. They will be up and running and flying in 5 minutes. It's that easy. Also, the Jetson has a learning mode. It has three flying modes, which is one is learning, two is standard, and three is insane. It has so much power. It is so overpowered, the Jetson. If you will be sitting on the ground, if you turn on the electric just go full throttle. If we would have not limited the amount of power you can have in those first seconds, people would literally lose consciousness because the G-forces will be so unbelievable pulling himself up. So we have a learning mode. The learning mode makes all the controls a little bit sluggish. So even if you do, you know, very big inputs in the beginning, you know, you will not jerk you around so much. And then you have the standard one, which is like the normal flying mode. And then you have one which allows a little bit aerobatics, allows a little bit more leaning in the curves. But that is... we suggest that you have used it for at least 10 hours before you hop on that level.
I'm curious about, because you mentioned that the customers would be able to assemble the vehicles themselves. And how would you ensure that they that they build it the right way. You mentioned training, but I suppose that some of these customers would not have a piloting background or a manufacturing background to assemble.
Final assembly is going to be quite easy, okay? And it's going to be, we're going to show them at the factory what they need to do. We're going to show them which tools they need. We're going to show them what cables goes into where. It's an important part of the pre-delivery process, which will happen at the Jetson factory with the three steps we were talking about. So the first step is, of course, learning where you can fly it near your house, what is Class G airspace. Number two is, how do I do the final assembly? And number three is, we'll teach you how to fly it.
And I'm curious why you would choose the self-assembly route as opposed to shipping it built.
Because if we ship it built, then we need to certify it. It needs to be certified the aircraft. It cannot be an experimental home built. If you want to be on the Part 103, but you don't need a license, then it has to be a home built airplane. Or a vehicle.
And let's back up a bit. So you mentioned that you built the prototype in 2018. And what are some of the challenges that you saw or still seeing in going from prototype to full production?
Hey, everybody. I just want to let you know that this episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by our friends at the Ford Motor Company. Built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress from connectivity to autonomy, Ford has one simple goal, and that's to improve the mobility of its customers. Ford has been using technology to shape the future of transportation for over 100 years and is dedicated to solving the world's most pressing mobility issues. What you might not know is that Ford has a series of divisions that make these visions a reality. Ford X is Ford's venture incubator that unites entrepreneurs, designers, and engineers to shape the future of transportation. Ford's City Innovations team brings innovative ideas to life through community workshops, crowdsourcing initiatives, and citywide mobility challenges. And Spin, a property of Ford, brings e-scooter sharing to cities and college campuses. So here's your call to action. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com.
Well, what lies ahead? The final prototype of the Jetson 1 is what you see in that beautiful movie, which looks like Star Wars, right? Which I think now has 12 million views or something. Like, it's incredible how many people are watching it. Well, the thing we have done now, which is the most important thing before we can go with the production, is that we need to test this thing. We need to test it to destruction, okay? We need to go full power on the engines. I mean, to understand how much heat they are making, we need to see what happens if we turn off one engine. We have to test the ballistic parachute. I mean, we have to do all these kind of things and to make sure that we can catch any errors. You know, is this link arm too weak? You know, maybe we have a problem with vibration, you know, and this is what we are doing. And this project has already started. And according to the project plan, it's going to be ready in April. And after April, we're going to have added half a year of buffer to that. But we think that we can do the first 5 or 12 pieces of 12 Jetsons that we're going to deliver is going to be delivered by the end of 2022. And then we go on full-scale production in 2023. But right now, it's important. We have to test the prototype. We have to catch errors. Yes, because our number one priority is that this is a safe vehicle. It can't break. It's not allowed.
Right. I see on your website that the 2022 production for the Jetson 1 is already sold out. How many vehicles are those?
12.
And you're planning another set for 2023?
Yes, 100 vehicles, of which 88 are already sold. So we have sold almost a bit over 80 vehicles the last 2 weeks. I get every 5 minutes, I get a purchase request from someone who wants to buy. Every 1 hour, I get an email with someone who either wants to invest in the company or just buy the whole company. It's unbelievable, the interest in the product and the company that we have seen.
And at $92,000 per vehicle and $22,000 deposit, it seems like you're targeting a pretty high-end sort of user. What do you estimate your total addressable market to be?
We don't know yet. I mean, I think we're just scraping on the top a little bit now. You know, I mean, I can sell many, many more that I can possibly supply here. Okay, I'm doing a selection of people. You know, a selection. So not everyone will get to buy it. Right now, we are prioritizing people that actually have previous experience in flight. Either they had a helicopter license or a private pilot's license, or maybe they are doing parachuting or something like that. I think that the if you think about price point, I mean, right now we are the first to market. This is the price, you know. This is what it costs, and it doesn't seem to be scaring away customers at all, you know.
You're the first to market. Have any other companies tried to fill in that recreation space for eVTOL?
I think so. I think there are a couple of companies that have, but they have different philosophy. You know, they want to either go straight into urban air mobility, which means they are automatically making pushing themselves back 5 years. You know, because they'll be have to wait for legislation. But there are some other companies that I think are interesting out there. You know, but there are never any company like Jetson that has actually said, "Here, we are ready. You can come and buy."
Interesting. So let's get into the vehicle itself. So for those listening, it looks like it has a fairly open structure, so no glass, right? And it seems really light, 190 pounds, if I have that correctly, and max speed of 63 miles per hour. I assume that speed is capped by software. How fast would it be able to go if it wasn't capped?
We don't know. We have to test that. I think that the problem again here is the regulations in the United States. If it goes faster than 63 miles per hour, it's no longer then our license is required. Also, what you have to if you go faster than that, also you will be sitting at an angle that is quite. I mean, the faster you go, the more the angle towards the direction where you're going, because That's the way how these things work. I don't know, but it can definitely go faster if you want. You know, if you reprogram the computer.
Tell us a little bit about the battery capacity and the range for the vehicle.
Well, first of all, let's talk about the most interesting and the most important part of the Jetson, and that is the beautiful aluminum frame which you are sitting inside. And the reason why we have aluminium is because aluminium bends, which means that if you hit the ground, then you have crumble zones built into this frame. And it, as you can see on the page and in the movie, you can see that the entire frame is more looks like something from a race car, from a racing car. So you're engulfed in this, and you're no matter how you hit the ground, that aluminium structure is there to protect you. We think that the majority of the flights will be 10 to 30 feet off the ground. No one is going to go 1,500 feet because it's not very fun. If you have some kind of disastrous event happening to the flight control system, or say that two engines cut off or something like that, if you fly fast, 10 feet off the ground, then you are going to hit that ground faster than you'll be able to do anything about it. So that aluminium frame is so important in the design. It's there to protect you. You know, it makes an event, if you fall from 30 feet or 10 feet, it makes that event survivable, you know. Whereas if you would have a carbon fiber monocoque, which I have seen or many, many other have, it's a much more expensive technology. And also carbon fiber has a very nasty side effect. If you hit something, it will shatter like glass. And instead of protecting you, it will certainly throw carbon fiber shards of carbon fiber through your body, you know, as you are crashing, you know, so that you definitely don't want that. That's what we like to choose airplane aluminum instead. The propellers are in an H position, and on each corner you have two motors and two propellers. They are connected to one battery each, and that is a closed system. So if one battery goes, it just kills off one of these propellers. And then the central computer understands and listen, we are now missing one motor, so we have to slow down immediately. And also you get a big red warning flashlight on the dashboard saying that it's time to land now immediately, okay? But you have to land yourself. The batteries, I mean, the weight is 86 kilos. That's 196 pounds, is it? Is it? Maybe?
Yeah, yes. I believe so. Yeah.
Yes, I think so. Yes, the batteries are over 50% of that. So it's built like the Jetson is built with carbon. The chair is in carbon fiber together with Kevlar. So and there's also protection guards because you're protecting from the propellers. So if a propeller would break, we don't want it to go flying it towards the area in the general direction of the pilot. And those things are. But so the Jetson is built like a racing bicycle. You know, it's the same. It's trying to save every gram. You know, making it as light as possible. And right now with the battery technology that we are using now, which is the same batteries that Elon Musk used for his cars, which is Panasonic, we have about 20 minutes flight time if you are 85 kilos in weight. However, the first Jetsons that we actually delivered to a customer are going to have 25 or 28 minutes of flight. And that is because Panasonic, just 1 month ago, they showed new battery cells. And these batteries has a lighter and they have 20% more energy density, which means that we are probably going to be able to extend the flight time with a minimum 5 minutes. And this is gonna be an iterative process every year. It's not the battery. There's so much right now happening with the battery development. It's like the processor wars of the 1990s. You know, we first had the 486 and then you had the Pentium. And every year there was a new process every couple of weeks, a new processor with more megahertz, and it was half the price than the one that was previous one. And that kind of like gigantic leap forward is what we are seeing right now in battery technology. And the batteries are replaceable and the Jetson ones. So whenever new battery technology is available, you will be able to just change the batteries. You can get new ones from us and then you will have much longer flight time. Yes, and the electric motors and the airframe and the computers is 100% maintenance free.
How would a customer be able to charge the vehicle?
You put it in the mains at your house. In Europe, we have 220 volts that, and you charge it. It takes 1 hour. It's literally one cable, and you put it in the socket in your garage, and it goes into charging mode. In the United States and North America and many other places on planet, you have 110 volts, and then it takes 2 hours something. Yes, but you do it yourself.
And you mentioned the safety warnings that the vehicle would give you when it detects an obstacle. Is that through LiDAR, or do you use image recognition in any way? Or
No, there is no AI. It's LiDAR. LiDAR has a basically it's a laser that is pointed in a downward direction, so the Jetson knows exactly how much how you're flying over ground. Also, when you land it and you're flying really close to the ground, like 1 meter or half a meter, it slows down the maximum ascent and descent. So it feels a little bit like flying over a cushion when you fly close to ground, because it slows down your rate of descent, so you don't hurt yourself. So you make a proper landing.
What do you see the future eVTOLs in general being like in the future? Do you see mass adoption by customers for your purposes, adventure, and for the other what other companies are pursuing? So B2B.
I think what we are seeing right now is this a big wave of very early adopters. And looking at the client list that we have right now, it's mostly billionaires and millionaires, or people that are really, really like flying and they want to test this new thing, and they're fascinated by the concept of being able to fly. Our average customer, many of them have a big property somewhere. Some guy has a vineyard in Napa, or he has a farm in Texas, excuse me. So they have a plan where to fly this, you know, and then they're really looking forward to it. But right now we are seeing the very early adopters. And I think that it's going to take 3 or 4 years before we have even started to begin building something like an eVTOL market. Yes, we are so early right now. right now, and what is halting the market is legislation. The technology is there. We just demonstrated this 1 month ago. The technology is there. We have just been something that you can fly, that's easy to fly, and that you can buy. Yes, the problem in Europe is the legislation that people like that are buyers from Germany. They don't know if they can fly it yet, and that's going to take 3 or 4 years. And I hope. At least my gut feeling is that it's going to be similar to the United States. As long as you fly away from big cities, you know, you can't fly in Berlin, but you can go to the Lake District. You can fly there at your summer house. That you can do. I think that in 5 or 6 years, we're going to see a big influx of first flying cars that are going to be commercially certified for use on a city. Those things, the earliest ones. And also there's going to be certain cities in the world that are going to be exempt from normal air laws. So you can, you know, say like Dubai, for instance, that are very aggressive on anything that's flying. Yeah, they are probably going to say, okay, let's become the first city where we make eVTOL available, you know. So let's allow eVTOLs of a certain classification. To fly in this in a beautiful city. The problem with Dubai is that it's very difficult to have these things flying during the summer days, because the air is so incredibly warm. So you don't have air density. So some helicopters and airplanes just can't start. It's incredible. But I hope that's gonna happen. I think in 10 years from now, I think that eVTOL and the cities is something normal. That is something that you don't look up in the sky and go, oh, look, a helicopter. You don't do that anymore. You used to that. There's this constant buzzing, you know, not constant, but there's a little bit of buzzing going on. In 15 to 20 years, I think that the revolution has really, really, the wheels are all now rolling really fast. And now that means that when you go out in a big city, there's constant buzzing in the air. There is significantly less cars on the streets below you. I think that you will have structures on top of big houses that are going to look like mushrooms, but people park their eVTOL cars, flying cars. I think so. They're going to charge them for the night. I think there's going to be big terminals, but big structures in certain points in big cities where you can land your eVTOL, or where air taxis can land. So you're not going to, when you fly somewhere, when eVTOL is going to be able to pick you up from your structure, your mushroom, your terminal on top of your house. But then you're probably not going to be able to fly directly to an address. You're always going to fly to the terminal that is closest to where you are heading. And this is going to be done in the air. Now, if you look at what is happening, how urban air mobility works today, let's take Sao Paulo, for instance. Sao Paulo is the Olympic gold winner, heavyweight when it comes to urban air mobility. Today they have the largest numbers of helicopters per capita. There's an incredible amount of helicopters there, much more than your New York City. Sao Paulo is the place on the planet when people are flying between skyscrapers and the elite. They never go walk on foot on the ground ever. They have a helicopter waiting, and then they're going somewhere. They go straight from their penthouse to their penthouse across the city. Now, even if you're looking at Sao Paulo, you're looking at hundreds, maybe 100 helicopters up at the same time. You can still solve this by a human person with a human brain who is talking on radio, doing separation between these helicopters. this is feasible. You can do it. But when we are talking about talking to replace traffic now, you know, we're going to replace cars. Okay, then we are talking about tens of thousands of flying devices, flying things, or maybe 100,000, you know. And then you are going to need something that is called automated air traffic control. No longer a human that you're talking on radio saying, oh, this is Sierra Echo, Kili Yankee, November, I'm prepared to start. Could you give me, you know, altitude, you know, go somewhere. No, I think that it's going to be, you're going to have an iPad kind of device, and you're going to sit in your EVTOL waiting for you to go on top of your terminal in your house. You're going to select another terminal that you want to go to. The automatic air traffic control is going to calculate the trajectory for you, but also it's going to make sure that you don't hit any other EVTOLs on the way. And you can't do this with a human being if you want to have many of these things up in the air at the same time. You know, because if you're talking humans, then you need 500 feet of separation. If a computer can keep the separation, then you can talk, maybe we can go down to 30 feet or 100 feet, you know, we can make it much more dense. But you are not going to be able to fly yourself in a city. It's going to be done with a computer.
And that about does it for us today. Thank you so much for joining us, Peter. We really appreciate taking time out of your day to chat with us, and especially considering the time difference. A condensed version of this conversation will appear in our transportation newsletter tomorrow with a link to the video replay. Sign up today at inside.com/transportation for your daily dose of all things transportation.